The boys go back to the future to watch Neo battle Agent Smith in The Matrix Reloaded, then head back to the Old West to see if those cowpokes can really defend themselves in Jon Favreau's Cowboys and Aliens. They also review the trailer for The Adventures of Tintin, Steven Spielberg's first hack at a full-length animated movie. In movie news, there's more about Man of Steel, Perry White is Black, a possible reboot for Short Circuit, and how about Snow White and the Seven Ninjas? Welcome to a brand new reel of COL Movies, number 64. Me, 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 me. Me too.
The past.
You telling me you built a time machine? Out of a DeLorean?
The present.
When does this happen in the movie?
Now. You're looking at now, sir. Everything that happens now is happening now.
The future.
Hi. Welcome to the future.
And I'm telling you, it's great here.
You are listening to COL Movies.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to brand spanking new reel of COL Movies. This is reel number 64, and I would like to introduce my uploaded co-hosts, Ray and Steve. How are you guys doing?
Uploaded? That sounds painful.
Sorry, I didn't know that you actually had a... Our surly co-host. There we go.
We're the surly.
I didn't notice we actually had an adjective yet. So I had scrolled down, so I was like, okay, what do I say? What do I say? What do I say? Uploaded! There we go.
We're uploadedly surly today.
Oh, by the way, my name is Jeff. I don't think I mentioned that.
Who are you again?
And yes, if you've been watching my Twitter feed, Facebook feed, you probably know, yes, I'm live at Starbucks. Thank you. Long time. Yeah. Anyways.
Are we getting a sponsor?
They're giving me free Wi-Fi, so anyways.
There you go. That's a good
sponsor. That's all I care about. In any case, on to the news.
News on the mark.
Today, Scott Johnson from Frog Pants fame had mentioned on his Google Plus page that today should be known as Superman Plus. Because we finally get our first look at Henry Cavill as Superman in The Man of Steel. So we get to see the costume and everything.
Hate the costume.
Really?
It's all rubbery looking.
Yeah. It looks like Daily. Captain America, a blend of Captain America and Spider-Man. I don't like it.
Like it's too... Well, it's almost more armorish. So
right.
It's like it's Kevlar or something like that.
Chainmail or some shit, yeah.
Textured.
Yeah. Rib. So it's got a little more texture. So it's looking kind of like the latest Spider-Man costume.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if we've talked about that before or not. And the S is a little more 3D, three-dimensional. And it looks huge, by the way.
Yeah.
It's a really big shield that he has on there.
What about his hair?
I think we need...
Just looks
messy. It's one of those things where I think I'll probably have better judgment as soon as we see it in action. Because it might look... Like, the picture looks kind of... Ugh. But when you see it in action, you're like, oh, yeah, it's not too bad. And we can't tell if he has his red shorts on. It's all dark in that area. Yes, I'm trying to look at his package, but that's beside the point.
His bulge.
It's probably something like you get out of like the International Mail catalog or something. It's probably lift and separate so that, you know, makes him look a little bigger.
Supportive, but in any case, I can't see it because it's in the dark. And anyway, so we'll have a link to the Slash Film article on that. So check that out on our website. Tell us what you think. Go to our website, COLmovies.com. Leave a comment. Let us know. So, and we'll might talk about that next time. Speaking of Superman, or the Man of Steel, I should say, it's fine for Perry White to be black. But Akira must always be Asian, says Eric Eisenberg and Josh Tyler at Cinema Blend. And they wrote this interesting article because it was recently announced that Lawrence Fishburne will be playing Perry White in Man of Steel.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody has seen you know, Lois and Clark and the original Christopher Reeves movies and Superman Returns and the old serials.
in the comic books, everywhere Perry White is, well, white. This change over to Lawrence Fishburne, you know, the first time I heard that Lawrence Fishburne was going to be playing Perry White, I'm like, that would be so cool. What do you guys think?
I think he makes it, he could be, he can be gruff and that kind of, you know, that whole Perry White feel. I could see it.
There's times when, there's times when race or physical appearance don't really matter to the character. I mean,
right.
Some characters transcend that, but I don't have a problem with him playing Perry White. But I think there's times when it just doesn't really make much sense to change a character physically or however, you know, like I'm kind of reading ahead in this article, and there's a little thing down at the bottom. It says physical appearance matters. It's not just about race. You can't recast Robert Downey Jr. to play Conan the Barbarian for the same reason you can't cast Derek Luke to play Clark Kent. Pasty white Peter Parker is an icon, an indelible part of our cultural consciousness. Akira is and always will be Asian. But Perry White, Nick Fury, the Kingpin, those are the guys who stand slightly to the left of those icons. Hollywood should feel free to have fun with them.
I agree. I completely agree with that. There are just some characters where it's just about how the character is presented.
Mm-hmm.
Not, you know, they have to have like some sort of physical similarity. Like Lawrence Fishburne is that more gruffer, you know, broader shouldered guy. And that's kind of what Perry Wright White was. Does right. he have to be white guy? Not really. I don't expect him to be saying either Great Caesar's Ghost or Great Shades of Elvis. I'm not going to expect him to say that, but I mean, like in Lois and Clark, where he said Great Shades of Elvis instead of Great Caesar's Ghost,
mm-hmm.
Ghost, you know, there's that change, but it's still Perry White. And I think this is just going to be perfectly fine. I think that this was a great casting idea. Mm-hmm. They mentioned Nick Fury in here. The only downside to that whole racial change, because Nick Fury in the regular Marvel Universe is a white guy, but in the Ultimate Universe,
he's black.
He's Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah,
he's not just black. He's Samuel L. Jackson. They actually purposely had him created like that.
Nick Fury has been black for several years in the cartoon on television.
I think that was based off of the Ultimate.
Yeah,
Universe.
Yeah. So I mean, so that's not so much of a surprise, you know, to people who might not be the comic book religious of the old times, so like the ones that are watching it now or watching reading them now, you know, that's not a surprise.
They are in the Ultimate Universe. They just recently killed off Peter Parker, but they have found him a replacement,
mm-hmm.
and that's going to be a mulatto ish type guy. Well, mulatto is not the right term because he's half black, half Hispanic. So they're going to have a different one, and that's in the Ultimate Universe. So that's not like the actual canon. And then you also have to think of, John Stewart was put into the Green Lantern Corps. You know, he was a replacement Green Lantern for a while and, well, still an active Green Lantern. I don't know about you, but,
I'm like, John Stewart, I thought you were saying John Stewart's going to be Green Lantern. I was like, John Stewart's? I was just
well.
Totally
he could
not...
be in a future. He could be in a future one, but I'm not talking about that John Stewart. In the comic book, in the Justice League cartoon, he got this black Green Lantern,
right? Yeah,
and that's John Stewart. Is his name? So, just happens to have with a great political comedian, but that's beside the point. So, there's lots of places where race doesn't matter, but there are plenty of places. Like, I cannot see a black Superman. I could see like a Steel during the Return of Superman and after the Return of Superman, where there was a black guy who put on a steel suit and did his own little Superman-ish type thing.
Mm-hmm.
That he was black, which was fine, but he was just so much, his characters was so much, he's got the shield on as an icon, not because he's claiming to be Superman. So Superman is white. He just that's the way it is. So there's no way you can have a black Superman unless there really is some sort of replacement, kind of like the John Stewart and Green Lantern. But Superman's white. It's just that's the way it is. And yeah, in any case, enough of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes. I think we all agree on those.
Mm-hmm.
And what's this Cinema Blend talks about?
I know. In reboot news, I've got a couple of intriguing reboots. And this one particularly is another, as Fuzz would say, rape of my childhood.
yes, Johnny Five may be alive yet again.
Damn, I was going to say it.
Alive again.
Thank you. Again.
Well, okay, what word on the street is the director of Hop, Tim Hill, has been signed to reboot Short Circuit. However, it's been on the reboot shelves for about 5 years now. So whether or not it's actually going to get done is the whole question, because there have been a couple of people that have been linked to this at one point. Like the director of Paul Blart, Steve Carr, initially signed on, and then he left the project. And now Hop, the Hop director, Tim Hill. And a lot of the things that Tim Hill has done have been kid friendly. Garfield, Alvin and the Chipmunks, Hop. So if it's gonna be interesting to see where he chooses to go with this, and also where they're gonna take Johnny Five today, considering you know he was really cool back in the day,
right?
But what's it? You know, like, is Johnny Five gonna be more humanoid? Is he gonna still be that same kind of thing? Is he gonna take it back to the 80s? You know, kind of reboot. But at the same time, I'm like, why? If it's taken 5 years for the project to get off the ground, maybe that means leave the project on the ground.
Well, there's also looking at it this way. Do they have to set it in modern times?
No. That's what I said. They could.
And why would it necessarily need? And why would it necessarily need to be? And why wouldn't it necessarily be human if they did do modern times? Is they could just have, we're trying to have a robot, it's going to be flexible. Maybe it's going to be more along the lines of
Pinocchio.
Sort of Transformer.
Or Pinocchio.
Yeah. Get the Pinocchio idea, I suppose.
Yeah.
You know, that would be a good idea. I would like to see what happens with this, so I'm curious. But I don't know about raping of my childhood, considering the Short Circuit movies. We got to put Short Circuit on our list in general, but
I'm almost wondering if, because I'm reading this and it says that they, you know, it began in 2006 and then Dimension Films bought the rights to it in 2008. And I wonder if they were like running with the ball there, and then WALL-E came out in 2008, and they went, stupid robot looks just like Johnny Five.
They already rebooted Short Circuit.
Yeah, they beat us to it.
Yeah.
Could have been.
Yeah, but WALL-E wasn't quite like Johnny Five, and it wasn't live action, so.
Yeah.
If anything, I would like to see where it goes. Whether it'll be good or not, that's something else, but.
We'll see. It has to do a lot to make it better than it was. But speaking of, and now you want to go way out on a limb here? How about Snow White and the Seven Deadly Ninjas?
I'm totally there.
Okay, because, yeah.
It says bad movie written all over it that I have to see.
Yes, because Relativity and Universal have been apparently dueling over this Disney film that's developing, where it's kind of been in development since like 2002, apparently. It started out being called Snow and the Seven. Now, today, it's kind of evolved to the Order of the Seven, whereas the seven dwarves, air quote, are all – like ninja warrior type people, set in like the China, in the China, like Great China epic kind of look, period film. Yeah. And apparently she comes along and then they have to, you know, they kind of try to help protect her from the evil that she's apparently an English woman in China. And, you know, so I guess that's why she's Snow White, because she looks so different from everybody else. That kind of thing, and sets her apart. So it's going to, I mean, it's going on this whole different little, it's going on a way different tangent than we've been used to. But, you know, apparently they have the blessing, you know, wherever it's going, Disney's been involved in this. So it's not that somebody just got the script and decided that they were going to go nuts. So with it, it's apparently, you know, Disney's allowing this to happen.
Wasn't there some other weird sort of remake of Snow White before with Sigourney Weaver or something in it?
Yeah, that, I remember that too. But I still think that was like Snow White.
Yeah, it was closer to the actual, you know,
like the yeah, more like the, yeah, more like the it was not a happy-go-lucky Disneyfied version of the,
yeah, it was the emo telling.
Yeah,
Snow White.
Yeah, but this one is taking it to a completely different place, you know, where the
turning it into an action film.
Yeah,
makes you feel like it's going to be like a House of Daggers or Crossing Tiger King and Dragon type thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, but they're talking about you know, speaking of which, this is what it exactly says. The Seven are a 19th century set desperate band of international warriors belonging to a centuries-old order who have lost their way. Their meeting with an English woman being chased by an ancient evil is the catalyst for their redemption. While the project is set in China, the warriors will be locals from the U.S., Russia, and each warrior will have a unique fighting style.
Oh, that could be interesting, actually. Now that I'm hearing that, we'll see what happens.
Yeah,
it's piqued my interest.
Yeah, some different stuff. You know, and there's lots of different people involved with this, apparently. You know, that, you know, they're talking about director of Happy Feet, who was also in the running at one point to do the Fraggle Rock film. You know, there's all kinds of people that they're talking about. They just haven't really gotten anywhere. But again, this is another one that's been kind of been in development since 2002. So, wow. You know, going on 10 years of, yeah, going on 10 years of, is it going to happen? So we'll see.
Mm. Agreed.
Instead of hi ho, hi ho, it's going to be like hi yah. I'm glad you were so on the same page with me there, Buzz.
All right. With that, let's move into the past.
You're telling me you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
It's time we're going back in time to take a look at a sequel. Yes, we haven't reviewed the first one, but we move on into the sequel, which is actually takes place after the animation stuff that was done. Otherwise, you kind of get lost for a couple things and not quite sure about a couple things. Or at least one thing, I think. I'm trying to think. I can't think. It's The Matrix Reloaded, which is 74% fresh, 74% audience rating. The directors are the Wachowski brothers at the time. Stars Keanu Reeves, Lawrence Fishburne, and Carrie Ann Moss.
Yes, now
why are they not the Wachowski brothers anymore, Jeff?
Well, we got Andy still. But the other one is not a brother anymore. Now a sister. He's named Lana. I forgot what his name was.
It was Larry.
Before. Larry.
Yeah.
So Larry, Lana. Oh, that sounds good. So now it went from Andy and Larry to Andy and Lana. So, but it was not Lana at the time this movie was created. So, but if you're going to look her up on IMDb, you're going to have to search for Lana, not Larry. The same.
Right.
Or just search Wiskowski, you'll find it.
Yeah, you'll find him. Her.
But that's... Oh, genderbending. Anyway, moving on. So, you know, I have no idea why I specifically decided to go with the sequel instead of the first one. I think the first one was so great.
I think I have a theory on that, Jeff. That would be because, much like the beloved Star Wars trilogy, I believe that the Matrix trilogy sort of emulates that, meaning that you had the first film, which was sort of genre-breaking, like, did a lot of things nobody had ever seen before, like, oh my god, this was amazing. But then you go to the sequel, which a lot of people actually consider, like, the best one out of...
Wait.
Well, and it was the highest grossing, so it was the most popular film.
Right.
I mean, when you're talking about these movies, you're looking at... the reason why it's so higher grossing was mainly because of... mainly because everybody was like, ooh, we love The Matrix. Now everybody needs to go out right now and see the sequel. And then we got this. Now, I actually don't quite understand the Rotten Tomatoes ratings. I don't think this movie is that great. I have a ton of fun with it. Maybe that's the reason why the ratings are so high. I mean, I really enjoyed watching the movie, but we're back to spectacle here. Well, where the reason why I liked it was not because the movie was a good movie, but because it was spectacle, technically speaking, sure, it was good. But in some sense, it was kind of a piece of crap.
But it was spectacle, but there's a ton of Easter eggs in this movie. A ton of Easter eggs in this movie. If you look at all the trivia that's available on IMDb, for example, there's like... You know, there's references to religion, you know, so much that it was banned initially in Egypt, you know, and some countries in Africa. There's references to, you know, computer cults, you know, and like hacking. And I mean, apparently, like, there's like a ton of, you know, like a shit ton basically of Easter eggs and just undertones in this movie that for those of us who just want to go watch the spectacle, which was me, totally just watching spectacle, you know, I enjoyed it. But apparently, you know, all these people were going again and again, perhaps, or watching it over and over just to catch all the undertones.
Yeah.
Which I had no idea of.
See, for me, it kind of goes like this. Like The Matrix. Okay, The Matrix was awesome. The Matrix was... Like I said, it was revolutionary in terms of the way they shot things. They innovated a ton of things, you know, not just bullet saying time. Bullet time, but I mean, just their use of wire work in American cinema. You know what I mean? It was, they brought a lot of things that we weren't used to as a Western audience, not used to seeing. But if you take that movie and sort of cut it off from the other two, it's a movie that totally could have been like a standalone one-shot deal. Like, it could have ended and they could have never made another two of them and would have been fine.
Right.
The fact that they filmed the third one right along with this one.
Well, I'm talking about just number one. The first
one. That's true. Oh, you're right. You're right.
So, and again, I'm continuing my Star Wars analogy here. Again, I think Star Wars was a movie that, you know, they could have, if they would have never ever made the other two, you would have been fine not ever seeing the other two. But we're glad that they made them. I'm glad that they made The Empire Strikes Back because, to me, it sort of epitomized the whole trilogy. And to me, this film kind of goes places that I would never expect the original to go. The Matrix to me was just a simple action film with incredibly innovative visuals and action scenes. Like, but it wasn't like some huge tour de force in terms of story. It wasn't really all that original. I mean, I kept comparing it to the Terminator, sort of. It was like the Terminator meets Tron, basically.
True, I can see that.
You know? Then when you get to this movie sort of they were continuing to innovate because they were still doing things that you really hadn't seen before. They sort of pushed levels of CG, which I think one of the talking points here was about the fight scenes not looking as crisp.
Yeah,
I think that was a lot due to a lot of their use of CG in this. There were times when like there were whole scenes where Neo and all the Smiths were completely fake. There weren't any real actors there.
Yeah. You know? It just, for me, that was one of my major criticisms of this one. Right. Was just that particularly, like, I remember the wire work and stuff being just stunning in the first one. And sure, maybe I didn't notice it the first time I watched it because I was so excited about, like, seeing him, you know, knocking out 100 Agent Smiths in one foul swoop. But then watching it again for this time around, I was like, ew, he was really, like, you know, he looked really uncomfortable, you know, doing the backflip or, you know, or it was choppy while everything else looked so pristine. Do you know what I mean? It was just very obvious for me. Like, I think if you watch it again, you'll totally see what I'm seeing.
I think it's,
you don't need to watch it again. You just need to remember the first fight between Neo and, and the Agent Smiths.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it was kind of the concepts and the fights in there were kind of cool, but because of everything they were doing, they had to do a shit ton load of CG, and it looked terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, you still got into the scene, and there's plenty parts of it where it looked just fine, but especially when they're doing some of the you know, the slower motion and just moving all around, and he has the pole, and he's whipping it around. They're trying to throw all these Agent Smiths all over the place. It just ended up being really, really bad.
Right. Well, here's the thing, though. Here's what I'm going to ask you, Jeff. When you first saw this, not this viewing, but when you first saw it, did you still feel that it looked bad?
I felt it was off. I mean, I didn't feel that it was bad as I think it is now. But it felt weird. I was still drooling because it was like, this is so cool and everything. Well, you know, my brain was probably turned off more.
Here's my theory about that, and that's why I'm able to sort of be, a little more forgiving with this type of movie, is that I realized that, you know, when this movie came out and that scene may have been shot, at the time it may have looked better than anything we had seen.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And now we're looking at it going, it's not really holding up to what I would consider a modern standard of, like, human replacement in CG. The other thing about it, though, and I sort of really sort of clue in on this now, is what really sets off for me is there are points when I can totally tell that it's, you know, there are CG replacements of Neo and Agent Smith and stuff going on, that it sort of crosses into that uncanny valley. Where it sort of makes me uncomfortable because I can tell that they're fake and I don't really like it. Not that it looks bad, but it just sort of creeps me out a little bit. And I'm wondering if that's really playing a factor, at least in my interpretation now of watching this. There were a couple scenes in the multiplicity of Smith's fight scene, and one of the Neo takes flight. Scenes when he's up above the clouds, when he turns around, there's like this whole sort of, like, the reflections on his face don't look real, and it was just like, it really was like ooh, he looks kind of creepy there. And I think that's just like always now in my subconscious that I'm conscious now of that sort of feeling and what's causing that,
right?
Yeah.
But you know, I thought it was fun to find out a couple of things that they did, though, you know, especially like that most of the Agent Smiths, like, I can remember seeing this movie and thinking, wow, they got a lot of people that are made to look up like him. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Just that general thing. But, you know, learning about through the trivia that they did, you know, head replacements, just like, you know, Fincher did, you know, in Social Network, just probably with a little less, you know, specificity. Because they were definitely further away in most scenes, but I just kept thinking, I'm like, okay, well, they just had a bunch of people that they did up, you know, the hair and the glasses, and tried to make them really look nondescript. But then I thought that was interesting to figure that out, that they actually had digitally replaced their heads.
Right.
You know, I thought that's, I'm like, okay, that's kind of cool. You know, I'll take that. So they did work hard. It just for me particularly with, I, you know, the Neo stuff in that fight scene, for one, just really, you know, like they're bullet timing him do like a backflip or whatever, and his knees aren't all the way bent, and you see him like taking time to turn. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I'm like, ew. I'm just like, that didn't look good. You know, if you're going to bullet time, it needs to be super smooth. You know what I mean? Or certain things. And it just caught me. But I agree with you 100% that's because I have a discerning eye now. Because, you know, I've seen it done well as time has progressed and get better. But when I did see it initially, I was like, holy crap.
Right.
That was so cool.
Enormous technical challenge that they had to, you know, overcome to sort of – I mean – just to sort of even approach the same level of popularity and stuff that The Matrix hit. It's one of those things where it's like you have a movie that's such a big hit and such, you know, a breaking of genre conventions that it's one of those things like, well, if they ever make a sequel, how can the sequel ever live up to, you know, the original? And I think this movie does a decent job of that, you know. It sort of leaves you wanting more, but we won't talk about we won't talk about the third movie because that one is just the. But
well, and that's one of the big things about this movie is it ended saying yes, there is going to be a sequel. This is the end of part one of the sequel. Like it, the final two movies were supposed to be just one big movie that lasted a really long time, and. To me, I don't feel like they should have done that. There should have been some sort of resolution or something where this is the end. If we don't have another movie, fine. But having this be part one, I think that was one part of one of the reasons why I didn't think this was a great movie.
Right.
Is that whole disconnect. It's like you really, when you watch this movie, it's kind of like you need to watch 2 and 3, like right back to back, so that you see the entire story. Of course, my problem is not with, you know, the technical achievement, the look, the acting, or the direction, you know, all the technical aspects of it. It's that story. It really, I think, it gets too confusing at points. It gets too unbelievable, almost. It's one of those things where you can't. I have a hard time suspending my disbelief on it.
Well, see, for me, it doesn't get to that point until the very end. To me, that's when the sort of philosophical mumbo jumbo sort of gets kicked up a notch. Not that it's horrible, but it's sort of like the whole scene with the architect at the very end is, it makes me almost laugh because it's like, I have to slow it down and listen to every word he says because he's just streaming so many things out of his mouth that you're just kind of like, whoa, 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 slow down a second here, buddy. what are you talking about? You know, and I don't want to say that, you know, the simplest way to say it is like he uses a lot of terminology that have sort of all of a sudden come out of left field. Like I don't expect to be hearing in a movie like this. So my brain's like not ready to process it, I don't think. Yeah, so when he starts going off and I'm like, oh, hold on a second. And I remember feeling that way in the theater, like watching the whole scene and then just being kind of like, wait, what did he say? Not that I didn't understand it. But it took a couple of viewings for me to sort of take it all in. And now that I've watched it a few times, I'm like, oh, okay, I get what he's trying to say. But it's such an overcomplicated way to get that point across.
The architect, you know, is using his CPU clock cycle sufficiently is what he's doing.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Which I think is taking people out of the scenes.
Right. And for as much time...
That's one reason I don't like it.
It seems like, you know, they spend the whole movie getting to this point in this scene, and then it's like, it seems like it goes by so quickly, Which drives me nuts only because they choose to spend so much time on things like the temple dance orgy scene. Like, I really didn't understand what the point of that scene was. Like, what were they trying to convey in that?
They're kind of celebration togetherness. It's kind of the feeling of the people of Zion to see, like, everybody's behind you, Morpheus, and they agree with you, and we're with you, and it's like this great nation behind, you know, our hero.
I'm totally okay with that. That is awesome, but it didn't need to be 5 minutes long. It could have been him giving his speech, everybody cheering, you know, jumping up and down. And then you could have cut to Neo and Trinity walking away and going to Shag, wherever they're going to Shag. It didn't have to be this whole slow motion 5 minute scene. Well, that was just like, I actually timed it. I sat there and timed it. Well, I'm assuming that it took longer than 5 minutes. They were sparing us, you know, but they didn't need to draw. I still don't think they needed to draw that scene out. To me, it just seemed like a complete waste of time. Now, it was amplified today because I didn't get a chance to watch this movie until today, and I had exactly like 2 hours and 19 minutes to watch this film. So it was like, I had no time. I'm like being really conscious of, oh my God, this scene is taking forever. What, you know, it's like, I'm like, fast forward. This is like, if I fast forward through this scene, I will miss nothing, you know? That was my thought.
I love the music. That scene, though.
Oh, no, the music's awesome. I love this. Oh, the soundtrack of this movie spent a good year in my car. You know, I love the soundtrack of this movie. And we'll talk about a particular point of the soundtrack of this movie that really gets me going. But
yeah, well, that's when the reason why I got the soundtrack especially was for that song. Just because it was all trippy and techno-y, and I'm like, yeah.
But there were hints, like, after that scene, the whole scene with the Merovingian, where there is some exposition going on, where he's sort of hinting at the fact that, you know, doesn't matter what you do, this has all been sort of predetermined, and it's all set up to go this way anyway, so don't get your panties in the wad about, you know, rebelling against the machines. You know, he's pretty much saying that. Although Neo doesn't understand at the time, saying that, you know, we've gone through this before, and, you know.
Yeah, the Oracle tried to say that, and then that guy said it again. Yeah, the whole thing is like, you're not the first, you probably won't be the last, you know, kind of. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he kind of pretty well said that.
I almost got, actually, in this viewing, was the first time that I ever sort of picked up on the fact that the Merovingian might have at one time been a predecessor of Neo's. There's one line in
just
there
got where corrupted or something.
Where Persephone says something about it, and I was like, wow, she's almost hinting at the fact that he may have been, you know, a Neo at some point in the past. You know, and he's just sort of been hanging out in the Matrix now, you know, sort of like, you know, living it up. So I kind of got that from that one. But again, we have the scene where we're flying into a virtual Matrix vagina. I don't get, it's like, what?
I don't remember the vagina.
Well, I mean, obviously it's done in the Matrix symbols, whatever.
Oh, okay.
But you're basically flying between a woman's legs. What do you think's down there? I mean, I know you're
it's
gay,
all
Jeff.
About creation. I mean, the architect
basically
explains it succinctly.
Right. But I'm just saying, he gives her a piece of cake that basically makes her have an orgasm on, you know. It's like, ugh, I don't know. I just was like, really? I didn't get that scene, really. I mean, I got the overall feeling for the scene, but I thought that some of that was totally unnecessary.
Anyways, moving on. So the big scene in the movie, The one scene which, you know, is what most people wanting to see in this movie was that big old freeway scene. Get on the freeway. I thought you told us never to go on the freeway.
Yeah, the freeway scene in this movie, a big shock here, the car chase scene, it made the film for me. I mean, as far as action-wise, yeah. I had never, ever seen anything done that way. Like, some of the things they did in that, I mean, I've even watched how they did that whole scene, and I still, when I watch it, I go, wow, that's really crazy, how, you know, thinking about how they did that. The scenes where when the agents start jumping from car to car, like landing on the hood, you know, in slow motion, you see all these cars flying all over the place in slow motion. Yeah. I know it's parts of it are CG, but it still looks amazing to me.
No. We know it's CG, but it was bad CG. See, that's another case of those really bad. I mean, when they're jumping on there, they're way too flexible and they're wobbly, and it's absolutely horrid.
The guys who can go through walls and go in the ground and all that kind of stuff was good CG.
That was good. I like that one.
Ew.
I like those guys.
I thought that was stupid.
I guess my point is, Jeff, if you watch a science fiction film from the 1950s, you totally won't like it strictly from the fact that the special effects look hokey.
Yeah.
No. Because so the special effects are practical.
Why
practical,
would the CG being
forget.
Bad? But why would the CG effects being bad be any different than, you know, at one time having stuff flying around on a shoestring?
Don't get me wrong. I love the scene. It was just bad CG.
10-year-old CG. You know what I mean? You gotta think about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know? True.
Right. But I have a hard time calling it bad. If at the time it came out, it looked awful, then I would say, yes, it was bad. But at the time that it came out, it was like, oh my God, this is amazing. It doesn't hold up, but that's true about most special effects. So I can't hold that against it.
Yeah. But yeah. Do you like this freeway scene better than the freeway scene in like Terminator 2?
This scene gives me goosebumps every time I watch it.
Okay, I was curious. I think both of those are really good, like, you know.
Well, I told you that the soundtrack for this movie existed in my car for a good long time, and that song from that scene was pretty much the track that got played the most. If I needed to get somewhere in a hurry,
I played that up track on the Matrix.
You took the freeway.
Yes, I did.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I thought that for me, what really kind of was really cool about this whole movie was that whole, like, Agent Smith assimilation deal. Because I didn't expect that at all. Like, I got it, you know, that he was becoming a rogue program and all that kind of stuff or whatever. But that he was replicating himself. Right, yeah. That he started replicating himself and taking over and, you know, and then that whole point where he could replicate himself into someone who was in the Matrix and then the goat and then send that person back into the human body, you know, was creepy as crap. You know, like, basically that, you know, we are computers, you know, people are computers and people can now be affected, you know, or infected with the virus, you know, with. It's like,
as stupid as this sounds, there's a lot of people who didn't get that, who didn't
really
understand that. Yes, I had this discussion with so many people when this movie came out. A lot of people sort of like the foil of Neo, like he is the bad version of him. Much like at the end of this movie, how Neo is able to affect things in the real world.
Yeah.
So is Agent Smith. Agent Smith has a presence in the real world, and he's able to affect things. So they're like two opposing forces, sort of. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. True.
Yeah, and I think it's almost ironic because in the first movie, he has Morpheus sitting in the chair. He says, "You know what I think humans are? They're a virus." You know, and then he becomes a virus after Neo freed him. However, that specifically worked.
Yeah. But I just thought in general, though, that you know, it almost went, you know, almost kind of became a, you know, when's he going to turn around and stick his hand in your chest and turn you into one of him, you know, and just become a, you know, it's like everything was, it's like a zombie movie, you know, almost, where everything starts turning, you know what I mean? Like, and you're like being chased by that, you know. I just thought that was, right. was a real interesting way of going about it. And then I think that the whole aspect of thinking how, you know, computer stuff could get into the real world like that, that was like a real crazy, you know, and kind of watching that guy go nuts on right. Zion, you know, I thought that was really interesting. I liked that whole aspect, and that made me think and had me going, "Woo, this is creepy." You know,
it's
creepy.
Running long, so let's move on into what we've learned. We've learned there's no point in old men making points. You do not truly know someone until you fight them. Fight Club? You can never see past the choices you don't understand. Some things never change. And some things do. Swearing in French is like wiping your ass with silk. Choice is an illusion created between those with power and those without. And denial is the most predictable of all human emotions. Fighting, euphoric orgy in a cave, bullet time. Love it! Good movie? Not really.
This, to me, this is the one before we stepped completely out of Wonderland. Seeing that the next film was almost completely done in the real world. You know, and for me, the little philosophical psycho babble, whatever, can get kind of heady and confusing, but fortunately it doesn't happen until the last sort of the 20 minutes of the film. But it contains in what I consider one of the best car chase scenes ever filmed. So.
Cool. And I like the concepts of this one, and I think it definitely takes the first movie to the next level. And it's exciting and full of twists and turns. But again, not my favorite movie, hasn't really held up all that much, but definitely go for it. Worth seeing.
Excellent, excellent. Let's move into the present.
When does this happen in the movie?
Now. You're looking at now, sir. Everything that happens now is happening now.
And the president would take a look at Cowboys and Aliens, 44% fresh, 60% audience, directed by Jon Favreau, starring Daniel Craig, Harrison Ford, and Olivia Wilde. So, this guy wakes up in the middle of the desert, has this thing on his arm, doesn't know how he got there, doesn't know who he is, doesn't know where he is. And all hilarity ensues. No.
Yeah, if you haven't gotten that from the trailers, then there's something wrong with it. Pretty much how every single trailer starts out.
Yep. Did you buy it? Did you buy the combination? As I started watching it, I started saying, this is True Grit and Super 8 mashup.
Kind of, in a lot of ways. I guess one of the things is I typically don't like Westerns, so...
Right, I kept thinking about you the entire time, to be honest.
And I was okay. I was okay with this. It didn't really. It actually made me kind of sit there and wonder, like, what is it about Westerns that I don't? I've never really been able to quantify what it is about Westerns I don't like. But I've never really held my interest. So when you throw something like aliens and spaceships and technology into a cowboy movie, then I'm like, hey, I actually like this cowboy movie.
Good point. Good point. Yeah. Yeah, and that was one of the conversations I kept having with myself about this movie before I went to go see it. I'm just like, I'm really about to go see a cowboy movie where there are aliens. And then I kept thinking, well, you know what? Aliens could have come at any point in history. They could have come to see the cavemen. They could have come to see, you know, the ancient Egyptians. They could have come to see the Mayans. All right, they could have come to see cowboys.
Right.
You know, they wouldn't just come to modern day world. They could have been here for millions of years. So I can handle this. I can handle this.
In this case, they just came for our gold.
Right, exactly. You know, yeah. But I mean, but I thought it looked good. Let's just say that.
But I personally thought that it was a little slow. The pace was a little kind of like, just, okay, we can move this along. You could have cut that out, moved that. It could have been a 30-second shot, which you took 2 minutes to do. My friend that was with me didn't necessarily agree with me on it. He thought it, you know, but I just kept thinking, I'm like, wow, if this is supposed to be an action movie, you could really scoot this along a little bit more, you know, and it would really just keep the pace going. Otherwise, you're like, go to sleep. Ooh, action. Go to sleep. Ooh, action. You know?
Yeah. I guess I don't, I'm trying to figure out what it is that the critics really don't like about this movie. Cause they're hammering it pretty hard. And from all the things I'm looking at real quick here on Rotten Tomatoes, it looks like for the most part they're hitting it because they're basically saying it's like, it's mediocre. Like,
well, there's a lot of little plot holes in it.
Yeah.
You know, and things that just don't get cleared up, you know, that's a lot of the stuff that I put on our list is, you know, that, you know, Jake's character to me, I get it. Once he got into the flashbacks, I get what happened to him and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But I don't understand. It makes absolutely zero sense why the alien took off his little thing, his hand, his cuff, put it down next to him, and then Jake just accidentally puts his hand on it, and suddenly he's like, "Oh crap! I have something on my hand." Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, what? You know, if it had been that, you know, the aliens were taking certain people and making them into, like, I don't know, warriors for them or something, you know, and they strapped his memory. And I thought, like, this hole that was in his side was going to mean that he had something implanted in him. So that's how they kept finding him.
Right.
No.
They weren't looking for him. The thing is the thing. They weren't looking for him. They were just looking for people.
Right, exactly. But the way that they kept showing up wherever he was, you know, and I was thinking, I was like, well, they must have shoved something up in him, like some kind of tracking device or something. I mean, I guess that, you know, I had all these better plot lines in my head that could have made this movie so much better. You know, but of course they weren't listening to my head. Right. You know, but
I think the reason why the guy took the cuff off is he was doing work on him. He thought he was docile already.
Yeah.
Strapped down and everything. He was no threat. I need a little bit more flexibility. Let me take this off while I grab this other tool. And then all hell ended up breaking loose.
So, yeah.
I mean, to me, it made sense. He was an examiner who was just, you know, it's like someone takes their gun out of their holster and puts it down. Why do they do that? Who knows? But then somebody else can grab the gun, but it's usually to get more comfortable in some way, shape, or form. That's how I took that.
The only problem I had with the whole arm wristband weapon thing was that none of the other aliens had one.
They
had
they guns. Did.
Oh no, they had them.
They had them too.
Oh, I didn't see them firing things off their wrists.
Yeah, they were when they were running around outside. Okay. Some of them had the big weapons,
right,
like the cannons. And others were running around shooting from their wrist.
Oh, I must have missed that, though.
I did see that. But I didn't understand why some of them didn't choose to use those. See, I guess, where, it, you know... Where, you know,
that's like, where I came up with use the glaive.
Yeah.
That crawl reference, because while he does, one, he uses his own cuff just a couple of times. Once he kind of figured the thing out, or he should have tried to figure the thing out. Whenever he came across one of those aliens, he should have been shooting like a madman. Why was he just not using the damn thing? Then when they're in that final fight, they're killing these guys. They should have been able to get those cuffs off, put it on their own arm, and be using them. Getting an advantage, come on. Use the freaking glaive, man.
Yeah, I mean, those were definitely some plot holes that were odd. The other thing that I found really strange was, you know, they're taking people to learn our weaknesses. But all they did was have people stare at the ceiling and then stick them with something and disintegrate them. How are you learning? You know, I'm like, it really didn't, that process wasn't really explained. Do you know what I mean? Like, and you kind of It was just an alien race.
So.
They had to give a reason. Well, I mean, it was just like there was just some reason why they were taking people, and like Olivia Wilde's character suddenly gave you that, you know, tried to seal up that plot hole by saying they're taking people to learn your weaknesses.
Right.
Okay. They just said something to try to, you know, justify why they're taking people, but it really didn't make sense what they were learning from them.
Well, we didn't know what their ultimate motivations were. I mean, obviously they were there to steal gold, but we didn't know. Okay, I guess what saved that for me as far as not really being bugged by it was I just immediately, as soon as they said, oh, she's, you know, they're harvesting people to learn your weaknesses, the scene from, you know, Terminator immediately plays in my head where they talk about, you know, I have detailed thousands of human anatomies because it makes you a better killer. You learn where to hit people to kill them. Which is what it sounds like they were doing. Like, how can we, what can we do to best wipe out the rest of the people on this planet? Well, we got to cut a few of them open and see, make some tick to figure that out. So that I didn't have an issue.
Okay. Thinking of it from that perspective, I can see what you're saying then.
I guess what the biggest, other than them saying, you know, oh, their gold is as rare to them as it is to us. Okay. What do they need it for? Like,
does it power their ships? Does it, you know, like, what's the, yeah.
They're never really too clear on that. So that was a little bit sticky for me.
Yeah.
Well, maybe she didn't know. She knows that their focus is to get the gold. Why do they need the gold?
Right.
She doesn't know. They don't know.
Yeah. Well, and then the aliens themselves, the whole aspect of they're these big, bold aliens that really don't give a crap about humans and they don't see them as a threat. And then, you know, they open their chest to reveal two more hands and then their heart is exposed.
Mm-hmm.
Flaw in design, people. Flaw in design.
That's their weakness.
Yeah, exactly.
Most of the time, their prey is already incapacitated, or at least they think so.
Yeah.
So they're trying to reach out to, you know, further examine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That big bad alien there with, like, you know, all that stuff, and then the little kid's like, chunk.
Every time that kept happening, where like the little arms would come out, the little T-Rex arms. I kept having like alien flashbacks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Extra mouth.
Alien teeth.
Out. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, why do they keep showing these little arms coming out? It just makes them look retarded.
Stop it. That's a bad word. Yeah. Don't you see Becky? Don't you watch Becky?
They were short, so technically they were retarded.
Ugh. Jeez.
But
as far as. Harrison Ford's character, I thought, made the movie. He was such a dickhead at the beginning, and, you know, until the end, he got too nice.
Mm-hmm.
But I really liked him.
He should stop making movies, though. I mean, this movie, don't get me wrong, loved him.
I thought he was good in this movie.
He was great. No, yeah. Don't get me wrong. It's just he's too old now. He's done. This was his last movie. And this is not a bad movie to go out on, but... You know, he's too old now. I think that should be, he should retire from acting. I know, like, Clint Eastwood, he aged well enough to be able to continue acting, but Harrison Ford has not aged well.
Yeah, I just thought that this one fit him. This role fit him, so it didn't bother me
totally.
Much. You know, and then... But with Olivia Wilde's character, though, that was just weird. I kept thinking, I'm like, how can she be dying already? But, you know, I mean, like, in, you know, this early in this movie. But then all of a sudden, you know, what happened, and I was like, huh? Like, what?
Okay. Who knows what an alien from another planet can do? Come on.
Yeah, I know. But it was just still an odd piece. And speaking of odd pieces, I caught a continuity error while watching the movie. Yeah, a very glaring one. There was a point where Jake's character was riding by himself, like, through the plains, like right after he had left the town. And I'm sitting there looking, I'm like, something's off. And then he comes up a ridge on his own, and I'm like, oh, the rider didn't have on the cuff. Like, it was, like, glaring. Like, I was like, something off. Yeah, and I, well, if I showed you where I'm talking about.
Yeah, I'd probably see it.
You know, it was, but it was just, like, one of those things. I was like, I turned to my friend, I'm like, did you see he doesn't have the cuff on? He's like, oh, I didn't notice. But it was like very, like, boom. Mm-hmm. It was just a stupid little thing I caught. But if you catch it, if you saw it, let me know. Mm. Weren't the only one.
All right. So, that would be Cowboys and Aliens. Nice and quick. So what did we learn on this one? We've learned that only two kinds of men get shot, criminals and victims.
Mm-hmm.
God doesn't care who you were, just who you are. And kissing makes you stop thinking. That is what we've learned from Cowboys and Aliens. I quite enjoyed this movie. I really liked it. I could easily just watch this movie at home on DVD, though. So, see it in theaters if you want. But perfectly okay to wait for DVD.
Yeah, I went in knowing that it was getting slammed by reviewers. So I'm not sure why. I mean, it wasn't the best movie ever, and it didn't really. I don't think it lived up to like some of the hype that it was getting, but it wasn't. I don't think it was as horrible as people were making it out to be. So
yeah, and just for me, I liked it. It wasn't as exciting and kind of action packed all the way through that I thought it was going to be, but I enjoyed it. I especially liked the settings and the look of the actors. It looked pretty authentic and stuff. But I once you got into it, you know, it wasn't as exciting as I thought it was going to be. So, but still worth seeing. I agree with Jeff though. You don't have to see it at the movies.
Wait for the DVD. You'll be fine. Rent it on Netflix, whatever. All right. Moving into the future.
Hi. Welcome to the future. And I'm telling you, it's great here.
In the future, we're talking about The Adventures of Tintin, directed by Steven Spielberg, starring with the voices of Jamie Bell, Andy Serkis, and Daniel Craig, speaking of which. Now, is Peter Jackson producer on this?
I'm assuming. The trailer doesn't really say anything other than with Peter Jackson, so I'm assuming he's producing in some form.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I will cop to like. All right, I've heard the name Tintin before. It's not Rin Tin Tin, folks.
No,
yeah, not that canine cop.
Which still comes to mind when I hear this. So that when I first saw the trailer for this or whatever, I was like, "Wait, is this the one about the dog?" And right. I'm like, "Wait, no, that's got to be something else." So I am totally not familiar with the source material, and for those who don't know, it's it's been a lot of things, but it got its start as a comic book and one of the most popular and longest running European comics of the 20th century. It ran from 1907 till 1983 as a comic, so lots of material to pull from, and it looks kind of like it's one of those old sort of like Flash Gordon sort of serial sort of things, you know, in that vein, just not science fiction. It's been made movies. There's been 5 other movies based on this character, just all from a long time ago.
And then they were all like cartoons, weren't they?
As far as I know, I was looking through here. There's been theater, documentaries, 2 animated television series have been made, both adaptations of the comic strips rather than the original series. They aired from 1958 to 1962. There's been, like I said, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 movies before this one from 1947, 1961, 64, 69, and 72. Was the last one. So lots of stuff, lots of history here in this character. Unfortunately, I'm not familiar with any of it. So
yeah, I'm not either, really. I realized that as I was watching it. I was like, oh, I
thought... I love running it out of battery. You were
it's
saying...
Okay. It's all- no, it's just that in general, I thought it was going to be about a, you know, a little tin dog, or that it was going to be about some you know, random child story. But, you know, I didn't get that, you know, Tintin is supposed to be like this reporter from Belgium who like goes out and gets information and talks mm-hmm. to all these places and goes places. And I was like, oh, he's like a real adventurer kind of guy. You're like, what? But I had to look up all that information on Wikipedia. Yeah. So I had no clue. Cause you know, I saw the trailer and then I was like, eh, nothing does anything for me about it. I clearly need to learn more to see what this is about.
Unfortunately, there's nothing in the trailer itself that like says, oh my God, I want to watch this. And again, I think it might be simply because of the setting isn't like drawing me in.
Mm.
And there's also a little bit, there's a little bit of that Uncanny Valley going on. There's a point at which I didn't realize it was an animated thing. Like, there's definitely a point where I'm like, oh, okay, this is an animated movie. Like, when you see the dude looking through the newspaper, like, that was the point where I was like, oh, they're CG guys. Like, it wasn't apparent on the trailer that I watched at first that this was all CG.
So who's the audience for this is what I'm trying to figure out, because now that I've read a little bit about it, you know, clearly this is an older... You know, it's an older cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily something that, I mean, I don't know if my, I could ask them, but I don't know if my nieces and nephew would have any idea who Tintin is.
Right.
But I don't know that it's something that I've not heard kids talk about it, you know, or whatever. So I don't know. Is this a nostalgia piece where they're trying to make an adult-oriented cartoon, or is this going to be something where they're trying to get kids into Tintin?
Yeah, see, I'd have to know more about the source material, because I have a feeling that the source material, I mean, just from what I've looked at, was more like young, not really young kids, but sort of like maybe the tweeners to...
Like Carmen Sandiego-ish?
Yeah, kind of like younger adults.
Yeah,
to get them into it. And so when a film pops up and it's Nickelodeon's branded on it, it really, you know, you're kind of like, that's the sort of demographic that always pops to mind, is like true. That sort of 11, 12, 13, you know, sort of thing. Now, whether or not the kids that age are going to be into something from this sort of era, I don't know. I'd assume that they've would have had to modernize some of the story elements, not necessarily the setting, but you know.
Yeah. Good point.
Yeah.
Understandable. I feel really nostalgic looking at the trailer here, and I really it with the film noir, it makes me really want to see it. So there's no way that I won't be seeing this in the theaters. In fact, this will probably be on our list when it comes out, if it isn't already.
What was that?
Oh, sorry. It was an accident. I didn't mean to let that out loud. I thought it was only in my head.
I was like, wow, you really don't like that.
just like, ugh.
All right.
Yeah, for me, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, for me, it was, like I said, it's not the whole, not necessarily anything in the trailer is really drawing me to this. It's the fact that it's, well, you guys know that I love animated films.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, Spielberg... just to get the chance to see what he does with an animated film is kind of like, that's drawing me right there. And then you throw Peter Jackson. Now, Peter Jackson's hit or miss for me. Sometimes he does things that I really like. Sometimes he does things that I think were a complete waste of time. But, you know, the combination of those two, I'm really interested to see what they come up with. So that alone has got me sort of interested.
I'll say, you know, looks interesting. I don't know anything about Tintin, so I suppose I'm going to have to do some reading or looking around. But I'm not, nothing really is drawing me to it.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Until Jeff puts it on the list.
I'm sure it will be. all right. So coming to attractions, we've got Fight Club for the Pass next week, followed by Rise of the Planet of the Apes, Rotputa. And the future will be taking a look at The Amazing Spider-Man. There's plenty of ways to contact us. Leave us a voice, leave us a message at our website, John, a comment on this show. Let us know what you think of these three movies. Are you excited to see Tintin? Are you excited? Did you really like Cowboys and Aliens? What did you think about Matrix Reloaded? Did you think it was actually a good movie? Besides just being fun. Please go to our website, colmovies.com, leave a comment. You can also shoot us an email at colmovies@gmail.com. Leave us voicemail at 361-265-8255. That's 361-COL-TALK. Please also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/colmovies, which is essentially pulling everything from Facebook at facebook.com/colmovies. Also, please pop on over to iTunes. Leave us a review. We'd appreciate it very much. With that, any final thoughts?
I was just thinking randomly about all the nostalgia lately. It's totally not associated with movies, but Thundercats got a reboot on Cartoon Network.
Yep, I watched it. I liked it.
Did you? I need to see about that. But really just thinking about all these reboots. But movies-wise, you know, we're getting toward the end of the summer flicks. So it looks like we're going to be in a little bit of a what are we going to see place for a little while, you know,
the post-summer rut.
Yeah, but I'm looking forward to a couple of them. That particular one, that's like The Help, sounds cute.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, a couple of have no heart.
Saying, it'd be great, know, just like, but
yeah, but I mean, it's maybe it's time for a feel-good movie for us instead of a, you know, rock 'em sock 'em movies.
Time to that's break later. Out of our comfort zone.
That's October.
Yeah. But it looks like there's, I mean, there's a few interesting things coming up, but, you know, but it's going to be an interesting post, you know, little post-summer movie thing, see what happens.
A little bit of a cool-down period.
Mm-hmm.
Until next year. But we've got plenty of great movies to be talking about. And with that, I think we're done. So for me, for Fuzz, for Steven.
Hasta la vista, baby.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
That'll do, dude.
That's the worst of my ever heard. I just stole it from a movie.
He's looking at you, kid.
End of line.